Hey there, I'm your host, Justin Owens, and this is the Can't Stop Moving podcast, a deep dive into the life, experiences, and businesses of my very own grandfather, Gary Owens. Each episode, we discuss a different segment of his life or a particular business. He was doing so many different things at the same time, it was really difficult to go in chronological order. So you'll discover quickly that we go off on tangents and down random rabbit holes, but bear with us as I figure out how to interview someone I've known my entire life and attempt to tease out stories I've heard for the better part of 30 years.
All right, well, we've moved cattle today, so of course we'll transition into recording another podcast.
Okay.
Possibly our last one for, you know, I mean, we've covered a lot of aspects of the careers you've had and your life. So let's dive into your transition into Piedmontese cattle from the horse racing.
Well, we had the horse farm, or we would breed over 200 mares a year for people from California and all over Canada, Oklahoma. They came. We had 7 studs.
What made you guys get out of doing that? Or why did you get out of the horses?
They closed all 3 racetracks in Washington, Yakima, Spokane, Longacres.
Why'd they close them?
The tax laws changed in 86, and luxury taxes came on like 25 or 45% on jewelry and boats, horses, furs. The politicians in their wisdom forgot or didn't take into consideration that people didn't have to buy those things. So they put a tax on it, everybody quit buying it.
So people stopped buying race horses for the depreciation, and tracks just didn't have what volume to run horses, or what was kind of the linchpin that led to the shutdown of so many tracks? Just less horse owners, less horses, less racing.
You could ride a the average racehorse runs 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. So you could depreciate them over the life of how they ran. If they broke down, you
depreciate the cost of the whole animal across 2 years or 5 years.
Wrote them off. Well, they changed that to 7 years.
Minimum.
Yep. Huh. And boats and furs and everything, just the economy just took a dive. So we got out of the horse business. And
what did you do with your studs?
Stan Horton wanted to continue breeding mares of his own and raising racehorses of his own. So flag officer got colic, twisted gut, and we took it to Pullman and they operated on him. And they said if he lives 72 hours, he'll make it. But most of the time you get peritonitis infection and you open up the gut. So he died in 72 hours. Mm. Boy, that just shut her down for us. He was bringing men from Seattle. 85% of our business was from Seattle. Mm. So,
and he was the one that ran against Seattle Slough in the Derby. In
ran 70, eight.
Was it 77?
78, I think. 78. I forget. Yeah, he had bowed in the Illinois Derby, and they shouldn't have put him in the Kentucky Derby, but they did. Mm-hmm. And that's where the tendon came out of the sheath. Mm-hmm. He was lame. Still ran eighth. He was a real good horse. Well-bred. When they let him on the track for the Derby, they said Seattle Slough is a favorite in this race. But Flag Officer is the best bred horse in the race. Wow. Pedigree. Mm-hmm.
So he died. Stan bought your other studs. You still had the horse farm.
The studs were syndicated, and we just moved the horses from our farm to Stan's farm. Mm. The syndicates remained in place.
So what did you end up doing with the farm?
I bought 220 Simmental cows, and they were just a real nice herd of cows. And so this guy, Dan Rust from Utah, somewhere, our name was in the horse business, and he knew one's farm from the horses, and so some way he heard through the industry, it was in the magazines and stuff, that the horse had died, and we shut the farm down. And so he called up. I got this backwards.
I kind of remember a little bit where somebody was calling the farmhouse and kept talking to Grandma.
That was it. I just had a memory lapse. Uh-huh. He kept calling and saying Gary ought to consider these Piedmontese cattle.
And she was just getting tired of him calling. You were still running around checking on. Well, you had the Simmental, but you were still busy going to the Orange Julius locations, China South. Like, yeah. you weren't necessarily in the house unless it was,
right,
you know, midnight.
So finally, Joanne got tired of calling, so you got to call this guy. So I called him, and he's telling me about Piedmontese, all this, how they're lean, they have very little fat on them, but they're tender. Most tender beef breed walking around. And it just, they have sweat glands that cattle normally don't have. They're the only ones with sweat glands. They come from the European bison. And the Zebu cow out of Pakistan. And 300 years ago, the Pakistani cows migrated into the Alps. And
little longer ago. It was about 20,000 years ago.
Oh, that's when the European bison was in the Alps for 25,000 years. They were trapped in the Northern Alps, the Piedmont Valley.
Yeah, and the Zebu cows migrated over from the Middle East. And
got trapped in there.
Yeah, by the Alps, and so they started interbreeding.
So 350 years ago, the farmers formed a registry, like a quarter horse registry, and started, well, they knew they had something unique, so Italy made it the national breed, and had a research center, and
I don't know that it was about 300 years ago. I think it was like late 1800s when they started keeping track with the herd book.
Yeah.
But so this guy called you up and was telling you about the breed.
Yeah, and I didn't believe all that stuff. So I, after a few phone calls, I called the USDA in Clay Center, Nebraska. They got 35,000 acres there.
Yeah, the Meat Animal Research Center.
Yeah, and so I said, have you ever heard of these things? And they said, yeah, we got them here. And they're one of 11 breeds that we're
kind of researching.
Mm-hmm. And I said, well, why you got them? They said, well, for some reason, they don't have any fat on them, but they're the most tender meat, tender breed. And we don't know why. But we hope to find out. Well, about that time, a little later in Belgium, two guys that worked in a laboratory in Belgium, they discovered, the lab discovered the myostatin gene in mice. They implanted it in a mouse. Same litter, they'd put that into one little mouse, and that mouse would become 5-6 times bigger than the other mice in the litter.
Like an inactive myostatin gene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so those two guys with that knowledge, it was
so
proprietary. They knew it. They had it in their brain. They came to the United States, and they used the knowledge that they'd picked up in the lab in Belgium and applied it at Clay Center.
Not necessarily to implant, but to identify inactive myostatin.
Yeah.
So for context, myostatin is a protein inhibitor. So all mammals produce myostatin. It's in your bloodstream, and when it comes into contact with protein that you ingest, you eat, it'll bond with the protein and flush it out.
Yeah, myo means muscle. Mm-hmm. And so on TV about that time, they showed a little German boy, about 5-6 years old, mm-hmm. holding 2 45-pound weights at arm's length.
That's like twice his weight.
Oh, it was.
That's crazy.
Yeah, this kid was built like a bull.
Oh, I remember this. His mom. So the identities of his parents were never released, but I'm really confident that it said the mom had been an East German sprinter, Olympic sprinter. Yep. Yeah.
She had two copies of the gene.
At least the thought was each parent had at least one inactive copy.
Or one had two and the other had one.
Anyway,
they came up at a 25% chance of getting a two-copy kid. They got it.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen any follow-up on that?
No. Hmm. Showed the kid. It was quite a picture. So anyway, these guys come to the United States and...
The researchers.
Yeah. And they brought it when it was illegal. They just brought it in their head and started in the United States lab when they'd picked up all the knowledge of the Belgian lab. It wasn't above board, as I understand it or remember it.
Because there isn't anything artificial about the Piedmontese inactive myostatin gene. Like, it's a natural mutation.
It turned out that that's the only animal that had it.
That specific gene. Or
Belgian Blue's got one, but it's different, way different.
Well, no. So the...
It's got 9 missing link in the gene chain.
Mm-hmm. I think it's 12 missing base pairs in the Belgian Blue genetic code.
Yeah.
So it's more of a deletion of their entire myostatin production, whereas the mutation of Piedmontese on the C313Y gene, it's just like a mutated form of the myostatin chemical. So it's inactive. It's incapable of bonding with the proteins that it encounters in their bloodstream. So all the protein they eat, you know, grazing or from their feed, just goes towards, you know, normal muscle production as it would if it never encountered any myostatin.
I got to say, for the record, you're smarter than I am because I don't remember all that. I just remember the highlights. You got it down pat.
Well, I've just read stuff more recently.
I think I'm losing part of my brains.
Nah. You've got the intangible side of it. You've got the... You lived it, you know, you were there, because they identified the inactive gene in Piedmontese in like 1999, 2000, something like that. And the breed had only left Italy for the first time, a live animal, in 1979, I think.
7 or 9.
Yeah. We'll split the difference and say 1978.
Yeah, the way that got the out, Italy had an export embargo on the international breeding. They wouldn't let semen or embryos or...
Well, no live animals, no embryos, but you could get semen.
No, not until that Italian kid went to Saskatchewan and was selling... feed, and he married a girl from Saskatchewan, and the Ministry of Agriculture, he would carry a picture of these cattle. So he convinced the Ministry of Agriculture and 21 ranchers went together and matched the agriculture mount, and they brought in the Piedmontese animals.
Yeah, the first import of what ended up being one bull and four cows.
Well, on the ship coming over, a cow from another breed got a disease and they had to kill them all. And so the second trip is when the first ones came.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
that's interesting.
Curtis Ackland and Walter Nelson went over and picked out Brindisi, Banana, Bibba, Biska, mm-hmm. Binda.
And then there were two other bulls that died. Like one...
Domingo got in a granary and foundered.
Uh-huh.
And...
one was hit by a front loader?
Yeah.
In quarantine or something?
Yeah. Well, yeah, in quarantine, it got ran over by a front loader.
That's wild.
Unbelievable.
And the whole time, like, the hard thing was... that I recall from when they went over and they picked these animals, the rules in place, they had to import them before they were 2 years old.
I figured.
Or maybe before they were a year old. But they're going over there and they're looking at these, you know, really young, immature mm-hmm. animals physically, and they're having to base their North American herd or worldwide herd off of what the parents looked like and older siblings looked like. So you're bringing over these calves, and I think they were under 2 years old.
Yeah. Well, the goofy part was to introduce them to North America, they'd take them to Glentworth, Saskatchewan. And you can't hardly get to there from anywhere. I mean, it is... You got to, well, I flew to Great Falls, got a car, drove to Glentworth, Saskatchewan. Hmm. When you go north of Great Falls to Canada, there's 60 miles of a road that there's only one house. Hmm. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere. Hmm. And so to start a breed in North America and put it in Glentworth, Saskatchewan, they couldn't have buried it in a better place to hide it. Mm. So when I went up there three times, I heard about it, so I goes up there three times and looked. And so I bought...
Well, I mean, you had the Simmental, and I thought you AI'd the Simmental.
In 77, I think it got some semen and AI'd.
87.
Okay. And AI'd a bunch, and one coffee calves come out, and they were real nice. But then I bought some embryos the next year, full blood, transferred them. Holy cow. I mean,
a little bit of a difference?
Oh, wow. It was amazing. I mean, guys like Everett Cole had ranched all his life. He looked at him and couldn't believe it. Look at the calf, 90 days old, 60 days old. To have a little bull calf come out with no muscles on his rear end, and 3 months later he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger. He had to change his name to Jones. Arnold Jones.
All right. So you saw the calves, you liked them, and you went back up to Canada.
I brought a semi-load out of there with one copies and a lot of one copies. And two copies.
So for context, animals with that we're talking about that have one copy, two copy, we're referring to how many copies of the inactive myostatin gene they have. So
yeah, the genes have markers called alleles. So when you say a copy, you mean an allele. Whether the allele is a one copy or two copies, a full blood or half blood.
Half Piedmontese. So yeah, all full blood Piedmontese, modern Piedmontese, have two inactive copies. And when they have a calf, they pass on one inactive copy. It's kind of like,
when you breed it to a zero copy cow, they got one copy.
Yeah, if you breed a full-blood Piedmontese to an Angus,
yep,
the Piedmontese will pass on one inactive copy, and
right,
the Angus is passing on one active copy, so the calf has
one. That's the one that they want to butcher
as a meat calf animal.
Yeah, mm-hmm, with one copy.
I want two-copy beef.
Yeah, it's so tender that you almost cut it with a fork. Yeah. And it's mushy compared to regular beef.
I read an account about the history of the breed in Italy, and back in the 1950s, before it was really, the breed itself was really well known across Italy, the butchers would buy full blood meat from the farmers, and they would market it as veal in their shops. So, I mean, this veal, I mean, there's different classifications of veal, but it's all pretty young calves. The meat they were marketing as veal was coming from 16-month, 18-month, you know, fully fed out animals.
I'm going to make it.
Good. We'll keep recording. But that just speaks to how tender the beef is. You know, the qualities, right, of the meat is so lean, but at the same time, so tender.
Yeah.
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 I forget where we were. Well, we'll jump in with where you went up to Canada and you, I didn't know you ever brought down truckloads of one copies. I knew you brought down bulls and you kind of put them into stalls in the old horse barn, like one bull per stall.
Yeah.
Right. And you invited people to come look at them and you were selling them at cost.
Yeah. I paid $22.50 a bull. I brought down a semi-full and I put them and filled the horse stall. Mm-hmm. And so people went and looked and then they signed their name on the tag on the front of the stall that they want to buy that bull. So I started them. And Everett Cole had 500 cows, mother cows. He bought 25 bulls.
Oh, my goodness.
I brought them down, paid the freight, sold them at cost. Get them all started.
Just have the breed, you know, have a growing presence down, right, here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's wonderful. So they knew I wasn't making anything. I just introduced it. Mm-hmm. It went well, and people started raising it.
So I'm thinking that was like 1990, about maybe 89.
I don't remember.
But through the 90s, you did over 200 embryo transfers with the Simmental cows.
And you know, it kind of stumbled along. It didn't. I thought it'd just take off like a rocket. Well, it didn't. Where it really made a move was when Lone Creek Cattle Company, Sand Hill Publishing Company out of Lincoln, Nebraska, publishes 26 magazines, Tractor House and all that. They bought, they started buying them and selling the meat because they were selling a smart chicken label. And they decided to go into beef and they picked Piedmontese.
And let's,
that's when it really started going.
To continue this conversation between Justin and his grandfather Gary, tune in to episode 17 of Can't Stop Moving.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and download so you don't miss a single episode. You can find Can't Stop Moving Podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. Visit us at owensfarms.com and interact with us on Instagram @ modernfarmerusa.